Moshe Feinstein is quoted as saying that after the Korban Beis Hamikdash, we have no simcha. There is no simcha. The only simcha that we have is only through and by Torah. And so today on Tisha B'Av, we are honored that we have Rabbi Graydon here with us. Everyone is familiar, as you can see from the crowd, with Rabbi Graydon, the Zionist that has been spreading Torah in Los Angeles for so many years, first with Rabbi Fassman's kollel. Now our community has had this blessed to have Rabbi Graydon and his wonderful kollel in our community. And therefore we thought there's no one more fitting to give us Divrei Yisoros and give us a proper perspective of what we should really be feeling right now in these moments before Chatzos, to re-energize us and focus us even more keenly on what Tisha B'Av is all about. So without further ado, okay.
I would want to, if someone were to be asked to take a guess, where in Shulchan Aruch, where in the Jewish code of law, did Rabbi Yosef Karo, did the author of the Shulchan Aruch, find fit to insert the obligation to mourn the destruction of the temple? And so Shulchan Aruch has four sections, with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of main sections and thousands of subsections. So anyone could take their pick and have a guess, and there would be all sorts of interesting answers. But the amazing thing, the unbelievable thing is that it's in the very first siman of Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim. If you open the Shulchan Aruch, if you open a code of law and you come to the first page, and you come to the second and the third subsection, which means you couldn't go five lines of Shulchan Aruch without being told by the Shulchan Aruch, Ra'ui l'kol yorei shamayim she'metzer v'doyeg al churban beis hamikdash. This is not Rabbi Sama's Musashi. This is the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch. In case somebody thought that it's just a Tisha B'Av discussion, this is the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch in the third Seif of Aruch Chaim. Ra'ui l'chol yorei shamayim she'metzer v'doyeg al churban beis hamikdash. Would be appropriate and suitable for every person who is a Yorei Shamayim. I suppose I'm not really Yorei Shamayim. But it says if it was a Yorei Shamayim, one would be Meitzer and Doeg al Churban Beis HaMikdash. How would that express itself? How would that manifest itself? So I'm quoting the Mishnah Berurah. This is the Chofetz Chaim. I'm not quoting a sefer that nobody's ever heard of, or the people don't relate to. And the Chofetz Chaim printed it. Here's the first page of the Chofetz Chaim, here's the second, here's the third. So if anyone starts Mishnah Berurah, not everyone finishes Mishnah Berurah, everyone starts Mishnah Berurah. So we all got here once. So read what he said. He says, Hamukubalim he'erichu ma'od begodel ma'alas kimas chatzos. The Kabbalists elaborated on the very important idea of arising, getting out of bed at midnight. Ki rabohi v'kvar nitpas b'sidurim seida hanhoga pikis v'arizal. And based on the writings of the Arizal, we are told what to do at chatzos, when we get up. So he says, the truth is, the best time to cry on the Churban Beis HaMikdash would be a few minutes before Chatzos. And then from Chatzos, so we say, good. So he says here to get up and to be Yorei Shamayim. So I got up before Chatzos and I cried in the Beis HaMikdash. I go to bed. It's late. So no, there's something else you have to do. You should go and learn Torah all night. Who's he talking to? Who did he print this for? Obesayf alaylo, when he comes towards the end of the night, yavakish tzrochov. He should start davening for his own needs. And he continues with other things. V'achar atikun, when all this is finished, shir mishnayis, koidim l'chol dover, then he should have a shir mishnayis. If he's a true Kabbalist, that would be a time to achieve great things in that area. It's very embarrassing to read such a thing. And if you read descriptions of the time of the Arizal, there used to be a shamus who would go around in Sfas, and he'd bang on people's doors at 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night. And he would tell people, it's time to get up. Time to get up to Tikkun Chatzos. And he used to get people to come. He didn't do it on Leil Tisha B'Av. He did it a whole year. And he wasn't fired. In fact, he was zoche, they said, to Gilui Eliyahu, this man, for his Mesiras Nefesh, for this mitzvah. So I don't have any more eloquent way to explain how obviously critically important this issue is. We didn't get past one page of the Sefer of the Mishnah Berurah, and we're told that this is an obligation. It's Roy Lechol Yerushalayim. Everybody considers himself a Yerushalayim. If somebody would be told they're not a Yerushalayim, they would be extremely offended, and rightly so. People try to have Yerushalayim. And here we're finding out what the first obligation of the Yerushalayim is. How would we try in a very short and succinct statement, how would we try to define what it is that we're crying over, or should try to cry over, or be upset that we can't cry over? So if you look in the Chumash, Sefer Shmos, and other places, you will find a pasuk, L'shachni b'seicha. I tase yasam meretz Mitzrayim, I took Jews out of Egypt, L'shachni b'seicha, that I should be able to dwell among them. Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's greatest dream, the greatest accomplishment that Rabbeinu Shalom awaits, is to be able to sit, kaviyochel to sit, and to live and dwell among the Jewish people in a manner which is appropriate for them and for him. That was the purpose of Yitzhiyas Mitzrayim. It was that in mind that we were taken out of Mitzrayim. We weren't taken out of Mitzrayim to be a free nation. We weren't even taken out of Mitzrayim just to receive a Torah. If the Torah were not to facilitate for us this ultimate accomplishment of L'shachni B'Seichem. I want to make it easy for all of us, because if we see something in a simple light, it's easier for us to digest. I'm going to give you a marshal. I'm telling you now, the marshal is totally inadequate and not quite accurate. But it will work for what we're trying to do now. If you imagine a family, a very successful, illustrious family, which has a patriarch, and the patriarch sits at the top of the table of this family. Because he sits at the top of the table, he creates order and he creates behavioral patterns and the dynamic at these sudos, at these meals that he presides over. So he sits at the top of the table. If somebody is speaking incorrectly, if someone is speaking out of turn, if someone is being disrespectful, if someone is saying something that is somewhat negative, if people are struggling, people are grabbing food, whatever he sees here, he has a way of correcting. He has a tremendous presence, a tremendous aura, tremendous influence on this particular moment. And even though each of the individuals sitting at the table is somewhat lacking, but they come here, they feel inspired by the fact that they're being led by such an auspicious individual, and someone they love so dearly. And for years and years, he's able to maintain this family at a proper madrega, even though they might have fallen away to the side, but the fact that they're able to create this dynamic and to maintain it gives a tremendous energy in the family. With time, some of the younger members of the family found out that other families don't do this. Other families have a television on the wall, or as many walls as there are as many televisions, and more blackberries and other important activities to be involved in living. The old man is somewhat of a disturbance, so they get together and they buy him a ticket to go on a trip to Alaska for a month. Say, Dad, you've been a great help, but you need some rest. You go to Alaska for a month. He goes to Alaska, he comes back after a month. It's not the same family. He tries and he tries, and he somewhat puts them together. After 6 months, he sort of had his influence again on the family. The youngsters get together and they buy him a ticket for a world cruise. But the world cruise takes a long time. They had to go the whole way around the world on a boat, luxury liner. And by the time he comes back from the world cruise, there's nothing left. This one talks improperly, and this one is dressed improperly, and this one is struggling. This one doesn't talk to this one doesn't come. And he says, you know what? This is not for me. Even though I have an achrayus, I have a responsibility to come here to guide this family and lead this family, but I have to feel comfortable also. I'm not comfortable. You know what? They're going to have to do by themselves. You understand that within 50 years or 100 years or 200 years, that family intermarries with goyim, that family can no longer be identified as Eretz Yisrael. It didn't happen 150 years later or 200 years later. It happened when they told the father to take a trip on the boat. The first time they told him to take a trip on the boat, that was the end of the family. Now we're just on a timeline. It may take 10 years, it may take 50 years, it may take 1,000 years. But that will not be due to their efforts. That is now due to nisibot, circumstances surrounding where they are and who they are. But in the Etzem Hadava, this essence, this entity, this corporate entity is now rakuv. It's now damaged. It's now contaminated. And it's going, the cells, the cancerous cells are going to eat the life cells. And eventually you'll see. Chochem is right, he can see it now already. Not a chochem has to wait till it happens. But that's what's going to happen. Think a second, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu constructed Klal Yisrael. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, Shalosh Pa'omim Bashana Yireh Kol Zchur Chos Pnei Hadoin. You have to come in Yerushalayim 3 times a year. You have to turn up in the Beis HaMikdash. Not everybody in Eretz Yisrael lives in Geula or lives in Har Nof. The people who live in Tel Aviv, the people who live in Be'er Sheva, the people who live in Yerucham, and the people who live in Haifa, and the people live in the Golan Heights. So the Talmud tells us that to walk from the Gvul, the border of Syria, to Yerushalayim, is Mahalach Chamesha Soyon, 15 days. So there are some people who walk 15 days in each direction to get to Yerushalayim. Let's take a moment, sir. Let's take a week. That the average person had to walk a week to Yerushalayim. 3 times a year he's told to go to Yerushalayim, so he's going to walk 3 weeks, 3 times 1 week there, and 3 times 1 week back. So far we have 6 weeks of the year just going to Yerushalayim. Then he spends some time there. It's a machlokes rishonim. Let's say he spends 3 weeks there in the year. So he's now got 9 weeks, over 2 months, devoted to this pu'ula of going to Yerushalayim. He's there several days in Yerushalayim. What does he see in Yerushalayim? When he comes to Yerushalayim, the central edifice in Yerushalayim is the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash is a makom where there is Shechina, where there is Divine Presence. And where the Shechina manifested itself in numerous miracles, such as parts of Karbonos that had to be rejected and wouldn't be burnt in the Mizbeach were thrown on the side of the ramp, and they were swallowed up by the Karka, even though the ground was cement and seemed to be in one piece, it was consistently swallowed up. Or there was an Amud Ha'esh, there was a beam of fire that went up from the altar. And even if it was a hurricane, the guy had to hold on his yarmulke and was losing everything else about him, this thing went straight up, didn't move. They were shechting hundreds and perhaps thousands of animals a day in the Beis HaMikdash in this weather conditions in Yerushalayim. And there was never a fly to be seen in the Beis Mitbachayim. You couldn't find a fly in the abattoir. No woman ever had a miscarriage from the stench of meat in Yerushalayim. Try living in a hot, dry climate and shechting a multitude of animals, some of which lay around, no one all immediately dispensed, Sometimes it took till the night till they made the haktar. And sometimes even afterwards they had to leave it around till they could eat it. And there was no adequate refrigeration, if any. So how can it be it doesn't smell? How can it be there are no flies? If you go into Israel today and you buy an ice cream, you walk down the shuk, you'll see the flies. Approximately 200,000 per ice cream. So what happened to the what happened to the bus? And more than that, May Olam Lo Omar Adam Tzali Amokum Sha'an Olin B'Yerushalayim, the Lashon of the Mishnah Novice. Rashi learns, the Machzavitri learns, the Goyen learns. What that means is, Parnasa was, person never found it tight living in Yerushalayim, was referring to Parnasa. Nobody who lived in Yerushalayim at that time had a problem with Parnasa. So people used to come from other cities in Eretz Yisrael, where they worked hard to try and make a living. They came to Yerushalayim, and they saw people who were oisik, kol yameim, b'toyer v'avoda. And they said, how do you do it? In Yerushalayim, it works. They came there, and they would see in front of them people's lifestyle. They were pashut ma'oichle amon, whatever that means, however it happened. But there was never a doichet parnasa in Yerushalayim. And there was something that was visible to the person coming from the outside. So the Vilna Gaon says, people used to come and say, that's it, settling in Yerushalayim. So can you understand what that is? Three times a year, you take your son, your 8-year-old son, your 7-year-old son, your 12-year-old son, your 16-year-old son, and your wife will probably come with you. She's not mechuyev in this, but she's mechuyev in simcha, and she's probably want to come anyway to with you. So your daughters will come, and you go and spend this time going to Yerushalayim. Who's going to Yerushalayim? Who's going on the way to Yerushalayim? Your Ishamayim, one of Mukai Mitzvah Hashem. And when you come to Yerushalayim, who do you see? People who came there. People are bringing karbonos. They regret the averus they did. They have to bring karbonos. Kohenim b'avodosam. Kohenim, it says in the Sifrei Kabbalah that the main avoid of Kohenim was with their kavonos, what they were thinking and how they connected to Hashem, not the physical activities. So they had to be an extremely high madrega to function that way. So you're seeing people surrounded by holy, saintly people in the holy city with the Beis HaMikdash. Can you imagine how much chizuk a person felt? How much a person felt that this is a place where he would like to be? How much a person, when he went home and his son started misbehaving at the table, he said, Yankala, maybe this table is not such a precious experience to you, but this is really a reflection of the Beis HaMikdash. The Shulchan is also some sort of Mizbeach. You remember what it looked like in Yerushalayim with the Mizbeach, Yankel? And Yankel feels, you know, he was there, he saw it, my father's right. There's something to live up to. And you give this constant, ongoing, repeated chizuk for a lifetime. If a person does some sort of Avera, and he figures, I'm doing this Avera, it's, I've got to go in a couple of weeks and appear in front of Hashem in the chotzer, bringing a carbon, and this kohen is going to look right through me. Maybe I should think twice. So you want to think, how far is there from that experience to today? I mean, you can't. There's no chart. There's no chart that's big enough to put the two extremes. How can you possibly put the two extremes on one chart? Person goes to Yerushalayim, b'binyanim, b'tifarato, and the person goes today. And today is gold compared to other times. Yerushalayim is referred to by the Navi in Tehillim as Mesois Kol Aretz, a place of Simcha, the place that brings Simcha to the world. Chazal say, Ma'olam lo'ilon adam Yerushalayim v'chet b'yadam. Nobody ever went to sleep in Yerushalayim and he still had a chait, a sin on his cheshbon. Because if he did a sin last night, Tomit Shalboiker was mechapir. And if he did a sin during the day, Tomit Shabbatabayim was mechapir. And he himself brought karbonos. And that was the atmosphere. And of course, we all understand that which destroys us, and that which eats us up, and that which creates such depression in people is all a person's inability to live up to their spiritual obligations. So you live in a place of spiritual buoyancy, of spiritual activity, of purity, of kedusha, so the person feels a different person, is able to survive and able to create a life which is on a far higher plane than otherwise would be able to do. Whilst this was going on, there's an obvious question. If you came to Yerushalayim, and every other Jew in your neighborhood came to Yerushalayim, and they came from every neighborhood, How comes the neighboring Arabs never noticed and didn't attack Eretz Yisrael during Yom Tov? Where were they? Where were all these people? Where were all the people who fought wars with us? So the Torah HaKadosh says, "V'lo yachmoid ish es artzecho v'alo yisecho l'regel." The Torah says, you know what? Kodesh Baruch Hu, I make you a promise. You go to the regel, nobody will envy and covet your land. Nobody will look to take your land. So Rav Noach Weinberg, Zichrono Livracha, the Rosh Yeshiva of Eishet Torah, said, that's a very good campaign promise for the first time. That's how presidents work. Right? Don't worry, when I become president, there will never be another problem. It lasts only 1 week, because we can see the problems coming back. So what's going to happen after the first regel, when you go to Yerushalayim, you come back and there's no country left, and that's a bankrupt Havtacha? That means the Rebbein Shem had to keep that Havtacha every single time there was an Aliyah regel, and the Yerushalmi brings, I believe it's in Peah, the Yerushalmi says that when people used to come back from the regel, they used to have the neighbors, the Goyish neighbors, go, where have you been? We thought you went away. We saw you packing up the donkeys and the camels. Where have you been? We went to Yerushalayim. So you went to Yerushalayim. There were people walking around it the whole time, and there was strongmen here. Yeah. Who was protecting your property? The Rebbein Shem sent malachim to people's houses and to the gvulim to protect people, because he promised. They lived this. This isn't something that we're recounting it hundreds of years, thousands of years later. They lived that way. They left, abandoned their properties, and they went off to Yerushalayim, and that was it. And they came back, and they were intact. And on the contrary, the terrible tragedy of Achav and Novos Yisraeli, Chazal Zogman, Kerem Hoyle and Novos Yisraeli, when did Achav the king become jealous and covet and ultimately destroy the world for the vineyard of Novos? Because 1 year Novos wasn't Oyle Leregel. Novos was a chazan, he had a beautiful voice. And when he came to Yerushalayim, Kabit Hashem Mehoincha, Tikri Mehoincha, Migreincha, they used to bother him all the time that he should sing and lead the davening. And 1 year he said, that's enough, I'm not going anymore, it's too much for me. The year that he didn't go, Achav killed him and took his care. Because he was over Yachmed, the Avtocha of the Torah, Yachmed Ishiz Arzach. So you live in a world like this. And then there's another whole dimension. That's a most interesting dimension. A very interesting dimension. From the Goyim and the Chasam Sofer in different places, and many others discuss something that's important for us to be aware of. There is no single correct way to serve HaKadosh Baruch. There's no such thing as you do what I do and it's right. There may be one Shulchan Aruch. There's a Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is the backbone and the skeleton of Jewish life. But after Shulchan Aruch, there's a multitude of things that have nothing to do with Shulchan Aruch. And they depend on the neshama of every single individual. And every single individual has to do different things. And the Goyen explains in Mishlei, sometimes there's a person who has a specific weakness. He has a specific weakness. And because of that weakness, he knows that he has to set up certain fences which other people might not have to set up. It's personal. Some people go into a supermarket, and when they come to the cash out, they have all these trashy newspapers. If he sees that, he's done. So he can't go to the supermarket. Maybe nobody should, but he for sure can't go. So one of his friends says, you know, on the way home, you drive past the supermarket, do me a favor, just pick me up these orange juice. So the guy can't do it. So one time you have an excuse, three times, yeah, ask him many times. So he says, this guy's a Russian. I'm asking to do me a favor and drop in the supermarket, and he has 25,000 excuses, and he's a big balmus, he talks about ches, he doesn't go in the supermarket. Says the Vilna Goyen, a person has to be prepared to suffer that even people have kindness to him, be angry with him. If he knows what is important, truly important for him, and what he's required to do to protect his madrega, that's his chiv. But every single person in the world is different, has different challenges and different issues. There's no two people are the same. The same thing would apply to a person, what type of career to take, and what type of person to marry, and which city to live in, and which shul to daven in, and what to learn, etc., etc. Every single person in the world has different chiyuvim. At one time, there were Nevi'im in Klal Yisrael. At the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there were Nevi'im. And Nevi'im were able to read the core of the neshama of a person. They were able to read and see the etzem pnimius of a human being and give the person advice. The Nevi was called a roe, apart from his function as being menabe nevuos, he was a roe, he was a clairvoyant, but not a clairvoyant, he was fooling people, but some of the Rebbein Shalom gave him that ability to be able to see into the primius of a person. And he could see inside the person, and he could tell the person exactly, for you, it's most appropriate to learn this Masechta in this manner. Don't go to the Daf Yomi Shir, it's not going to work for you. You have to go to this Gemara Shir with this Rebbe, and you have to spend 1 year in this Masechta, and then we can talk again. And this girl who's an outstanding woman is not the right woman for you. You have to guess, you have to this. I'm telling you, it's not the right woman for you. This is the more appropriate woman for you. Today, if someone says that's dangerous, the person isn't qualified to say that because we don't know the neshama, the primis neshama of a person. But Moshe Rabbeinu says that on the Goyin and Mishra in the 15th parak would tell people exactly what they had to do and how to do it. So where is a person's Bechira? There's plenty of room for Bechira after you've given guidance. The first guidance is to listen to the Bechira. That's the first thing. And after you listen to it, there's still 50,000 other things that come up that you have to take care of. But a person was able to maximize their avodas Hashem by taking guidance which was 100% meduyak for this neshama, for this individual. When you lose Beis HaMikdash and you lose Shechina and there are no Nevi'im, so I think you understand that's not a minor adjustment. You move into a different place, you end up with today, where we probably make more mistakes per square inch than there are hairs in the square inch to fill it. If there's anything to do wrong, we'll do it wrong. And we spend the rest of our life trying to catch up with some of the mistakes. And that's not bad people, that's good people. That's well-intentioned people. But how should we know? How can people know? Everything is choshech mu'pal. Mr. Sharim says that not only is there a darkness where a person can see nothing, but there's a worse type of situation, which is twilight, where a person walks around and he's mischalef ben omud la'odom va'odom la'omud. He sees a post, he says, oh, good morning. And he walks past the person, he ignores it, not realizing it was a person. That's our world. Our world is where we are completely confused what represents truth and what is not truth, who represents truth, who practices truth, what is called Masaira, what's not Masaira, what's called Kiruv, what's not called Kiruv, what's called Mutta, what's called Asar, what's called raising a family. Almost in every area, everything is in disarray, in dislocation. And it all relates back to that mashal of the patriarch sitting at the top of the table and guiding everybody. Once he's gone, everyone's left to their own devices, you're on a timeline for destruction. It's just a matter of how long it'll take. There's another side of this coin. There's something called galus. Galus doesn't have to do with the geographical location, exile, diaspora. It has to do with the distance of the Shechina from Klal Yisrael. We're in galus when we're not under the umbrella and the protection of Shechina. That's where we're in galus. Where there is no Shechina, where there's no divine presence, where there is no atmosphere of Ruchnius, so we're in galus. And galus simply dilutes, drop by drop, the essence of what a yid is. You know, somebody said on a tape not long ago, they were speaking to an older lady, and the lady said she went somewhere, and there was a rocket attack on that place, and she was scared stiff. She said it was nearly like Ni'ilah. She was so scared it felt like Ni'ilah, nearly felt like Ni'ilah. That's the way Jews used to feel. If Jews needed to give an example of what's terrifying, they would say Ni'ilah on Yom Kippur. Because they breathe Ruchnius. They wanted the example of what have true respect, or true, they would talk about how they respect their parent, or how they would respect their Rebbe, or how they would respect some other figure who represents Ruchnius. Not they would bring an example from the secular world somewhere and say, if you want to know what's real unbelievable success, so watch the movie star get out of his private plane. Our way of thinking, our way of measuring things, how we judge people, is all based on criteria which are false. Because we live in galus. Because we, as the Rambam says in the sixth parak of Hilchos Deis, It's only human nature that as time goes on, a person is influenced by what he sees around him, by the people, by them in Hogan, what they do. So 3 years ago, almost nobody had a dog. Now, a dog is almost as important as tefillin. To walk with a dog is almost as important as tefillin. I see people with a dog, they're in the, before chakras, after chakras, they're mishamish the dog, they pick up the schmutz of the dog, they chnes what they're doing. I mean, these are not Yiddish and Minhagim. Excuse me. A lot of people get offended. This is not the way a Jew behaves. A Jew isn't a shamas for a dog. A Jew is a hoylech lebeis medrash. A Jew is a person who dresses like a Jew and talks like a Jew. A Jew isn't somebody who picks up craziness from the goyim. They go through this fad, they go through the other fad. A Jew has to know how a Jew lives, and what a Jew is aiming for, and what type of kedusha he wants in his home. And the things that we let into our home, and the things that we talk about, and the things that we envy, and the things that are attractive to us, almost all of them are things which the Torah doesn't approve of. That's called churban. That's churban. When people make decisions how to educate their children, sometimes they do very well till a certain point. There's a tremendous mesiras nefesh in being a Yorei Shamayim. If you want your children to be Yorei Shamayim, you have to understand that not every college in the country is available to them to study. Maybe the Palestinians took care of that and closed half the colleges for us. But the fact of the matter is that you can't just go anywhere. I'll tell you a story about, I have a brother, a younger brother, a very righteous and fine man. And he went to the London School, the University of London, and he studied medicine. And he was the number one student for 4 years. At least one of us is capable. So 4 years, he was the number one student. When he finished, he had to do an internship. When you do an internship, so, you know, you have to be in the hospital many hours, and under normal circumstances, includes Shabbos Kodesh, which after he spoke to the Rabban he was connected to, he didn't see that he had a heter to be Mechal on Shabbos to learn medicine. And in England, there wasn't, maybe isn't, any program that accommodates Shmir Shabbos as there are some programs in America. So he was going to change courses, and then somebody after told him that in Maimonides Hospital in New York, they have a Shmir Shabbos program. So he applied, he was accepted. He was the number one intern for 4 years. He was a person who was capable of going to Harvard, or to Oxford, or to Cambridge, and be the number one student. So when he went to Maimonides, he sort of wrote up his medical career. It's a very nice hospital, but it's not competing with John Hopkins and all the other important, you know, it's a nice place. Baruch Hashem, we can help people. But that wasn't the career that he was l'chura going to get. And then when he finished Maimonides, he wasn't an American citizen, so he couldn't get a job either. So he ended up having to go to work for the NIS in Silver Springs. Well, it's not important. To cut a long story short, he's the head of a department in Baltimore today, and John Hopkins wants him as a professor. He doesn't want to go there because they want him to work 23 hours a day, and he says, I like going to Mincha Mariv also. And after that, he works so hard every day. Why am I telling you this? L'chaira, he threw away the opportunity to get where he needed to get because he wasn't prepared to go to those places which would compromise his Yiddish guy. And he still ended up where he wanted to go. Kodesh Baruch was still able to provide for him the opportunity to do and be helpful and serve the community and use his skills in the best. And he could have got to the very best place in the country. He just chose it wasn't for him. It's a personal choice. We need to understand what Golus does to us. We pretend that we're not aware of it, but we are aware of it. It eats away at the core values of what's important for a Jew. And my wife just told me that Robertson Cohen, Rav Moshe Cohen's wife, lost her father. He lived in Switzerland. She was telling some stories about her father. So, you know, you want to say how far away we are from true values. Switzerland, as you all realize, is a country, a very yekish country, and everything has to be just perfect. So he had to work Friday. Doesn't have to work Shabbos, has to work Friday. So they asked him, how late can you stay on Friday? So because he's a yekish yid, he said, well, candle lighting is 5 o'clock. I said, fine. They said, what is 5 candle lighting? He says, candle lighting, I can no longer do any work. Fine, so you leave at 5. So he used to leave every week at Adlokas Neris and walk home 4 miles. Now he could have told them, candle lighting is 5 o'clock, but no Jew leaves at candle lighting time. He's not benching licht, his wife is benching licht. So, yeah, but he says, no, everyone goes home an hour beforehand, and they have other things. He says, but no, you know why he didn't say that? Because they're paying him a weekly salary, and they're giving away to him the opportunity to leave earlier, and he won't take one penny from them that he's not going to take. So what I can't do, I'll tell you what I can't do. What I can do, I have to tell you I can do. Even though it's going to inconvenience me for tens of years, and my family, that I have to walk 4 miles, and Switzerland can be very cold in the winter. But we don't think that way. That's a year to climb out of the Golas. But most of us, unfortunately, live in the Golas. And the Golas means that we don't necessarily think and feel like it. The greatest simcha for a person is to do a mitzvah correctly. The greatest nachas for a person's children is to have midas tovus and they're trying. Not that they're the valedictorian. Kodesh Baruch Hu makes children valedictorian, not parents. They're born with it. But parents can give children an appreciation of chesed, give children appreciation of tznius, appreciation of Yerushalayim, of Derech Eretz, of Kibbud Avoim. That's the message you have to give to your parents. That's what's important. That's what the child has to have. When we want to measure ourselves if we're matzliach, we don't say, we got some more money, we want a bigger house. If you have money for a bigger house, buy a bigger house and bring people into it. But that's not why you're successful. You're successful because you've managed to increase your learning schedule, because you're medaktik b'mitzvahs, because your children marry finer b'nei Torah. That's when you're successful. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to want to know. He's not going to want to know anything about all the other things. I had front seats in the Laker game when they played against Pliny, and Amamish saw the guy throw the ball, gets you no marks in the Shomai. I had the latest Lexus that has a swimming pool in the back of the car, no points in Shomai. Maybe some negative points, no points. The person says, you know, my mother, Reb Chaim Brisker, you know, there's a psak in Shulchan Aruch, that Kibud Avraham is Mishal Av. Really, technically, if you have to honor your parents, and it costs money, you're only mechuyev to do so if they give you the money. And chiyuv, obligation. You don't have to take money of your own. It's your parents' money. So somebody once came to Chaim Soloveitchik and told him, my father is very sick and he's two, you know, train stations down on the railroad track where he lives, and I don't have money to go on the train, and the halach is mishalav. So Chaim just goes, yeah, fine, get walking. That's mishalcha. That's called Hatzlacha. These are Hatzlachas. And that's, if we want to try and crawl out of Churban, we want to try and crawl out of Golos, that's what we need to do. We need to recognize and understand that we are in Golos. Unfortunately, world circumstances make it pretty clear to us that we're in Golos. And if you lived in Malmo, Sweden, or you lived in Lyon, France, or you lived in Paris, or in some parts of London, or other places, you would also know every day that it's Golos. We perhaps choose to ignore that it's Golos, but it's Golos. Hashem should only be merachim, that it shouldn't get worse. And we should be zeiche to be yotze from the Golos with a schus. Of course, the Kodesh Baruch is going to have to be merachim on us, we're never going to have adequate schusim, but that we should be able to be participants in that. And we are participants, self calls self, you think about it. And Baruch Hashem, as the Rav mentioned, we have a koil. Koil costs a huge amount of money. It's an organization that only spends money and doesn't make any money. That's why you have to raise money. Every single penny has to be raised. Of course we struggle. But I think the amount of money that people give, it's lo yumen ki yisur. The tzidkas of yumen. The amount of money, I'm not the only organization in town. So if I'm getting this money, everyone else is also getting money. It's lo yumen ki yisur. And the amount of chasadim of people taking people in their homes, people being kind to other people, and the girls doing their chasadim and taking care of kids who need help, and the camp simchas and the camp hask, and the unbelievable chasadim that there's no goy in the whole world who can even think about, let alone do. That's who we are. I was once speaking to some students from Boulder, Colorado, and I started speaking about chesed. So one girl puts up her hand and says, she does chesed, she worked for Mother Teresa. I wanted to take a knife and cut kriya and make a bracha. I've got a Jewish girl telling me that she knows what chesed is because she learned from Mother Teresa. Take a look at one Jewish woman in a home who has 2, 4, 6, 8 children doing chesed all day long, and she has a mother, and she has a grandmother, and she has neighbors, and she has this, and she has the Shabbaton. When did the last time the woman breathed for herself and you need to run off to Mother Teresa? That's a hurm, that's Golos. So, Koponim, we should sense We have still half a day, and unfortunately half a day that's a very heavy half a day with Levayis and Tzaris and Shreklecha, Shreklecha, Tzaris and Klal Yisrael. We have half a day left. To Shema Kodesh Baruch Hu, we can, it's Kalvus. We don't want to be here next year. We have to think about that. This is not an annual event which we have, the Tisha B'Av, the Mahalach. This is a Churban. The event is a Churban. We tell the Rabbi Nishal, we don't want to be, we can, no point telling him. He knows that. He has to see it in us. We can no longer tolerate being here. We are unable to continue to be here. We're unable to continue surrounded by such tumah and some shigas, and we have to be liberated and brought out so that our children can grow up in Kedusha and Tahara, the families can be developed with the right Messiah, that people can practice the right Yiddishkeit, the Torah can be learnt in the way that we were meant to learn Torah through all generations. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see that in the heart, he'll be goyel us. When he'll see it, he'll respond. That's what we have to try to do. Thank you for the opportunity to have a chelik in the mitzvah today.
I'd like to thank Rabbi Graydon for wonderful Divrei Chizuk, also for all of us in the Mesiras Nefesh and the Avrechim in the Kol. I also would like to thank the Silverman family who helped sponsor Rabbi Graydon's Shir. Mr. Shem Jeff will have a Tvor Shleima. Mincha is at 1:45.